This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
Coming up later this hour, we will talk a little San Diego State basketball after last night's 80-67 loss to third-ranked Gonzaga at Viejas Arena. Good crowd, good vibe in the building, just outcome didn't go the way of the Aztecs last night. But still talking about Jackson Merrill and not winning the NL Rookie of the Year for a couple of more minutes before we take on Woods. One thing that kind of shows the unusual decision, I think, by the writers is the fact that, Luis Gil won the American League Rookie of the Year award, the pitcher for the New York Yankees. And it was the first time since 1981 that two pitchers had won the Rookie of the Year award. It's just an award that has always tended to have a position player bias. Unless there is not really a position player who had a great season and then they start looking kind of at the pitchers, it's always been one where, you know, there's just more value placed on being out there every day, especially as a rookie. It's one of the hardest things to do, honestly, in baseball. You talk to players, you talk to coaches, being able to post in your rookie season. It's tough for veterans to even do that.
You know, it is.
You see players like, you know, Jurickson Profar, they run out of gas at the end of the year when they play as many games as they have. To have Jackson Merrill perform at the level he did over an entire season, not, you know, 80 games, not 100 games, but 156 games, and to remain as consistent as he did over the course of the season. Those are the kind of things that I always hear real baseball people raving about. That's the true value in a player. If they can go out and do that, that's what's valued almost higher than anything else in baseball.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, one thing I know about Jackson is he was probably disappointed yesterday. But it's not going to quote unquote fuel his fire for next year. That's just who he is. He's got enough fuel, in the tank, Ben, that he's just going to go out and play the best that he can possibly play. You know, he talked a lot about individual awards this year and how he doesn't really care. He wants to win a World Series, and pretty great year for him regardless. Won the Players Award for Rookie of the Year, won the Silver Slugger. I mean, second team, MLB. Yeah, he had a phenomenal season, man. Nothing to hang your head about if you're Jackson Merrill at all, and certainly something to build on, and we're really, really lucky to have him. We're really lucky to have him here, and I look forward to watching that kid hopefully finish out his career here in San Diego.
Yeah, if he gets...
And one thing you can say is, out of the two of those guys, which one's more likely to finish their career on the team that they're with currently? I'd say 100% it's Jackson Merrill.
Yeah, if you get snubbed for the MVP or the Cy Young Award, you can always say, you know what, I'll come back and I will work harder next year. When you get snubbed for the Rookie of the Year Award,
it's done.
There's nothing you can do about it. You can't.
He could
have a much better season next year. I guarantee you he won't win the Rookie of the Year next year in Major League Baseball.
But he's not even nominated.
Won't even be a finalist.
Exactly.
The writers hate Jackson Merrill. He could hit 50 home runs next year, and they wouldn't even dream of making him the Rookie of the Year next year.
Somebody's going to believe you.
We need a contestant for Take on Woods, 833-288-0973. Looking for qualifiers for a trip to Las Vegas. We'll play our musical trivia game against Woodsy here in a couple of minutes, 833-288-0973. So the award show comes on yesterday at 3 o'clock, and, you know, you can just be patient and wait for the announcement, but as we tend to do, we're looking for signs as potentially who's going to win. So they had all three. They had all three of the nominees, the finalists, being remotely interviewed. Jackson Churio, Paul Skeens, and Jackson Merrill, who was down at Petco Park and still in town as they were, you know, being interviewed, in the boxes on the set on MLB Network. And all right, so if, you know, one of them wasn't there, you think, all right, well, it's probably not going to be them. But they're all there. I don't think, I don't think any of them knew in advance who had won. I heard like Matt Scraby saying afternoon, well, Paul Skeens, you know, he is all dressed for the occasion like he had been warned in advance he was going to win. I don't think anyone was warned in advance. I think it was a surprise. None of the three guys knew who was going to win the award. They were all just there being good soldiers and rookies and being part of that award show. But there has been a phenomenon where they do pick presenters who sometimes have a connection to the winner. And you went through the first like 15 minutes and they keep teasing it and they do interviews and they take another commercial and another commercial. And finally, we're getting near the 3:30 mark. And you know it's coming soon because they have to move on to the American League Award. And they tease a Hall of Famer is going to present the National League Rookie of the Year Award. And so we immediately went into speculation.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, if it's someone connected to one of the franchises, the winner's franchise, you know, it's probably not Churio, so who would be a Pittsburgh Pirates Hall of Famer that's giving this award right now? We're kind of going through, is anyone still alive that, you know, was a Hall of Famer in that organization? And we all think, well, maybe it's Trevor. You know, he just did the Players Awards last week and presented the Trevor Hoffman Award. Maybe they had him do a presentation for this, and it's going to be Trevor, and he's going to give it to Jackson Merrill. So they come back, and it's not Trevor Hoffman, but it is Cal Ripken Jr. All right, he is a former Rookie of the Year Award winner.
If I had a bottle of champagne, I would have popped it at that moment.
Certainly someone, you know, big enough name that, you know, all right, it's a good get to have him present the award. But considering that Jackson Merrill grew up in Baltimore,
yeah,
and considers Cal Ripken Jr. as, you know, one of his icons and favorite players of all time, it certainly seemed at that point where this was heading. Oh, this is going to be a really cool moment. Cleverly done, MLB Network and Major League Baseball, to get Cal Ripken Jr. to present the award to Jackson Merrill. So even me at that point, you know, I try to remain as skeptical as possible. When it was Cal Ripken Jr., I thought, okay, it's a done deal. Jackson Merrill's going to win this one.
No connection to Paul Skeens. No connection to Churio. Only that connection with Jackson Merrill. You're like, this is done deal.
Yeah, done deal.
Done deal. Got it in the bag. Congratulations, Jackson.
No. It's all right.
They fooled us. I don't know if they were trying to. Now, maybe they had asked Cal back in July. Like, yeah, hey, we're setting up some award shows already early in the season. Are you available on November 18th to present our National League Rookie of the Year Award? I don't know why that makes a ton of sense. He was an American leaguer. Whatever. But once it was him, I was pretty convinced that, okay, this is actually going to go our way. You know, well, this is going to go the Padres' way today.
How crappy would it have been if it was Trevor and Trevor announced Paul Skeens? That would have been the worst day of our lives. So, but no, I mean, look, we move on. Jackson moves on, and expect a great season from him next year. You know, I love that kid. We all do. He is he's a baseball player through and through, and this is just a minor blip in that kid's career, man. Sky is truly the limit. I don't think we've seen near the potential of what that kid can do on a baseball field, you know?
And we talked about it yesterday. I think it was Jim Callis had his list of the rookies who he thinks are going to go on to have the best career. And he actually had Jackson Churio at number one, and then Jackson Merrill at number two, and Paul Skeens at number three.
Great player, man. Jackson Churio. Shoto Imanaga, I thought, got a little bit hosed as well. He had a phenomenal, phenomenal season for the Cubbies as well. But
agree. We said it yesterday. All three of the National League finalists would have ran away in the American League.
Just crushed it. Just crushed it. I mean, Colton Cowser's a good player, and Luis Hill's a good player. But, yeah, I was surprised it was two pitchers this year. But, hey, man, that's where we are. Paul Skeens, a great pitcher. You know, he'll be wearing another uniform within the next 4 to 5 years.
And that's the danger of assigning too much importance to awards, which we do. I mean, we judge players in their careers in the end sometimes by how many awards they won. Oh, he's a four-time Cy Young Award winner. He's a
12-time All-Star.
MVP. But it's always comparative. Bobby Witt Jr. had a much better season this year than many MVPs over the course of his career. He's not going to win
it. He's not going to win it.
It's not his fault necessarily that he's up against Aaron Judge, who had an even more historically good season.
Yeah.
But it won't go down on his ledger. He won't win that MVP award, and he'll have one less than he might have had in another year.
Correct.
It's a comparative award.
Yeah, it is.
So you always have to be careful when you assign too much value to that.
Yeah, I mean, just keep you know, keep finishing top five in MVP for the rest of your career, Bobby Witcher.
Yeah, in like 90% of seasons, Jackson Merrill would have been the easy choice for National League Rookie of the Year.
Yep.
But so would have Paul Skeens. And unfortunately, they both went up against each other. So would have Jackson Churio in a lot of seasons. But they all can't win. Only one can win, and it didn't go the Padres way this time.
Yep.
All right, you ready to play our game? It's time for a little Take on Woods.
We'll see.
It's time for Take on Woods.
Take on
Woods. Woods.
Take on Woods brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. It only takes 15 minutes. You don't have to get out of your car. For directions and discounts, go to SoCalOilChange.com. That's SoCalOilChange.com. All right. Let's. Is this Charles?
Yes, sir, it is.
Charles, welcome to Take on Woods. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm feeling okay. Me and my wife are on the way to the doctor's.
All right. Well, this is a chance to qualify for a trip to Las Vegas. If you know anything about music and have a chance to beat Woodsy here, if you do, we'll put you into our drawing for the grand prize. Two-night stay at the Westgate Las Vegas Resort and Casino. Two tickets to the Soul of Motown show and a $150 food and beverage credit. Check out the Westgate's $70 million in room renovations, home of legendary Vegas fun, and the award-winning Soul of Motown show celebrating Motown legends. Must-see show. Get your tickets at WestgateResorts.com. To give you an advantage, we will let you pick our category. Here are your choices. Get Into the Rhythm. Those are song titles and artists with rhythm in the name. On the Compass, song titles and artists featuring one of the four directions on the compass. And then Texas Two-Step, all of those answers featuring a Texas city or town somewhere in their name. So Get Into the Rhythm, On the Compass, or Texas Two-Step. Charles, what would you like to play?
Let's do Get Into the Rhythm.
Get Into the Rhythm. All right, today... I feel like it's a pretty tough category. So, you know, get a couple right, you might have a chance. Five song titles and artists that all include the word rhythm somewhere in the name. You'll have 60 seconds. See if you can answer as many as possible. Pass. If you don't know one, we'll come back to it. First question, the two-second song. Paulie's going to play. You need to give me that song title and the artist. Charles, put on your thinking cap. Good luck. 60 seconds on the clock. The category, Get Into the Rhythm. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck, Charles. Let's take on Woods.
Oh,
yeah,
oh, yeah. Oh, boy.
Legendary songwriter Diane Warren had her first hit when DeBarge recorded which song in 1985 that became the group's bestseller?
Oh, Rhythm of the Night.
Correct. German Eurodance group Snap had a pair of early 90s hits with The Power and which 1992 song that reached number one in multiple countries?
Oh, pass.
Which band with a major southern city in its name had 70s hits including Spooky, Imaginary Lover, and So Into You?
Oh, fast again.
The Sound of a Storm Cloud begins which 1963 oldies classic by the Cascades?
It's got to have rhythm in it. Rhythm. Fast.
Go back to our two-second song.
Is it an Usher song, something?
It's not. Well, let's move on. German Euro dance group Snap had a pair of early 90s hits with The Power and which night... All right, you got one. And I'm not saying that that's out of it, because this is a tough category. This is one of the toughest ones in a long time. The song was Rhythm Is Gonna Get You by Gloria Estefan and Miami Sound Machine. You got Rhythm of the Night. Snap is Rhythm is a Dancer. Atlanta Rhythm Section is Spooky. And Rhythm of the Rain is the oldies. These are tough ones today. I think Woods is going to have a challenge with this one. All right, Charles's score. Charles, hang on the line. Charles's score is in, and Woods doesn't even get the category here. So 60 seconds on the clock. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck, Woods. Let's take on Charles. Pass. Legendary songwriter Diane Warren had her first hit with DeBarge recorded which song in 1985 that became the group's bestseller?
Pass.
German Eurodance group Snap had a pair of early 90s hits with The Power and which 1992 song that reached number one in multiple countries?
What in the...
Tough category today.
Pass.
Which band with a major southern city in its name had 70s hits including Spooky, Imaginary Lover, and So Into You?
Jesus Christ. About to go blank for the first time.
Not the category. This is tough.
Yeah. Zero, not pass.
The sound of a storm cloud begins which 1963 oldies classic by the Cascades?
I'm going to murder you.
Next question's from 60 years ago.
This is a tough one.
I'm blank.
You want to go back to the song?
First O forever.
This might be it.
This is it.
The good news to Charles is he wins 1-0.
Wow. Jesus.
In one of the toughest categories I think I've ever put into play.
Give it to me.
Category's called Get Into the Rhythm.
Okay.
The song was Rhythm Is Gonna Get You by Gloria Estefan and Miami Sound Machine.
Okay.
Rhythm of the Night, DeBarge.
This is the that song.
Rhythm is a Dancer by Snap. Atlanta Rhythm Section is Spooky, and Rhythm of the Rain is the oldies. Wow. Charles, congratulations. You are into the drawing for Las Vegas.
Did you get these from your grandfather? What in the world?
Just how it played out today. You know, the categories.
How it always plays out.
The categories kind of create themselves based on the connections and the words. And this one I knew was going to be really, really hard.
Save that. Wow. That's the first time I've ever been shut out.
I know. But Charles wins, so I feel okay about it. Congratulations,
Which
Charles.
Which one did he get?
He got Rhythm of the Night. DeBarge.
What's that song? Do I know that one?
This is the rhythm.
Are you sure that's that song?
I don't think that's that song.
Isn't that one? It's one of them. I don't know.
That's
a tough category.
The Rhythm of the Night. This is Rhythm of the Night.
Oh, okay.
They go dun 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 dun
dun dun dun dun dun dun. See, it's different.
Totally different.
Ah, you can be mad at me. That's all right.
I am mad at you. I'm in here sick. I'm in here grinding for you, and that's the thanks I get.
Don't Do This is coming up next.
Cherry World.
Dallas Cowboys. I don't
just
know.
Just them and just all of it.
I would call it symbolism yesterday.
Yeah.
Maybe symbolism at Jerry World yesterday.
What in the world is going on in
the
that
jokes
place?
Wrote themselves.
They really do.
We will get to that coming up next with Ben and Woods after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
Don't Do This.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
Oh, I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't Do This.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Well, if there was someone on this program who was going to defend the one percenters out there, you know it's going to be me.
And
I want to start Don't Do This today with a tweet I saw yesterday, actually, and I retweeted it, and then I heard Craig and Annie talking about it on their show as well. It was from a sports bettor who tweeted this. Actually, good name. His name's Bill Krakenberger. Isn't that a good name?
Yeah.
He said, friend of mine had a VIP box
Ooh.
For yesterday's UNLV game, which means Saturday's UNLV San Diego State football game.
Wow.
Not exactly the premium college football game of the weekend,
no.
But, you know, it's a nice, you know, it's Allegiant Stadium, so, you know, nice stadium, I get it. Said, ordered a pizza and the wings in the VIP box. Never realized what it was going to cost for this slop. Says they treat the luxury guest suites like they are in a club with bottle service. So he posted the receipt and a picture of the two food items.
Just two. One pizza, one
so
order
one,
of wings.
One pepperoni pizza and one bucket of like chicken tenders. Probably about 12 tenders in a bucket.
Okay.
One pizza, $300.
Good.
One crispy chicken tenders, $190. Subtotal. $490. Administrative charge, $112.70.
Good God.
Sales tax, $50.48. Total, $653.18 for a pizza with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 slices of pizza and about 12 chicken tenders.
It's about half burned. The pizza looks horrible.
There's the tendies.
Now, normally, not going to feel too sorry for someone who's watching a football game in a luxury box. But if there's a place in Allegiant Stadium where you can get a pizza for less than $300, and I'm assuming that there is.
I would imagine that there is.
You should not, as a school or as a sports professional franchise, you should not be ripping off your customers. If you can buy that anywhere else, they shouldn't have to pay hundreds of dollars extra just because of where they're sitting for the game. Do you agree with that?
I do. I do. And you know, if you've ever rented out a suite, it's expensive. I mean, it's expensive. I get one for Hannah every year for her birthday, but I get it through work. So I pick out, you know, a Wednesday night or something, and luckily we get into the suite for free. But then the food and stuff, you know, I pay for, and it's not cheap, but it isn't that expensive. I mean, you get a lot more. Like, we fed... Remember the time we took all the Little Leaguers up there? We probably had 25 people in that suite, and it was about that, but we fed 25 people, right? Like, so it's kind of, I don't want to say worth it, but it's, you get more bang for your buck. But holy smokes, man. And look, have you ever done bottle service, Ben? I'm assuming you have.
I've never done bottle service, if you can believe that.
It's the dumbest question I've ever asked, and I've asked some dumb ones. I don't know how... Like, it wasn't when I was 21, 22 years old, it wasn't really a thing. They didn't have, like, oh, if you want this table, like, how I grew up, it was, oh, we got here early enough to get a table, so we're going to chill over here in the corner and we'll buy drinks from the waitress. Not $400 for a bottle of Grey Goose.
I just feel like if I was, and I get this is Las Vegas and, you know, life is a little bit different there, but if I am running a team, I want to make the experience of the people who are willing to shell out for my luxury suites. I want to make their experience so great that they want to come back and do it again, not do something that says, you know what, I'm never doing that again. I mean, that's the worst kind of business practices, to exploit and take advantage of your customers like that. That's the surest way to make them one-time customers and one-time fans.
Yeah, once you get stuff posted on social media with that, you're done. Like, you're done. They have to, like, they got to, the whole system is ruined now. Like, since that guy posted it,
who's going to go? And then goes, let's get a suite for UNLV.
Yeah, I'm in. We've had the suite before. I just bring my own food in. I've just brought my own food in before. That's just kind of what I did. Last night in Dallas, here in Dallas, Ben, you know, not only did the Dallas Cowboys suffer yet another disgusting, embarrassing loss, 34-10 to the Houston Texans. I mean, everything is falling apart in Dallas, literally, in the case of their stadium. They are so lucky that nobody was hurt, but they decided yesterday to open the roof, first time in a couple of years, Ben.
A little police investigation here in Dallas.
Yeah, here in Dallas. They need to do a full investigation on what's happening at AT&T Stadium. As they went to open the roof, and a giant piece of the roof fell down onto the field below. It's probably, what would you say?
Looks like eight to ten feet long,
three feet wide.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a metal panel.
It's metal. It's a big hunk of sheet metal.
I would imagine it could have killed somebody had it hit them.
Cut somebody's head. It could have
falling
cut
from that
multiple
height.
People's heads off, like a guillotine, like a legitimate guillotine falling from the sky. I mean, Jerry Jones, like, is it
there? It was.
Yeah, there
metal.
Was
guillotine.
It is unbelievable. Right to the field below. What do you do?
It does feel like a metaphor for the sorry crumbling state of that organization.
It is. It couldn't be going worse, right?
I say,
now.
Ryan Clark had a line or something like, "Well, the bottom's already fallen out of the Cowboys. Why not the roof?
Why not the roof?" There, you know, you remember last week where the sun was blaring in and CeeDee Lamb could not see the pass. I mean, it is just
not going well for
it's
Jira.
Not going well for old Jira right now in Dallas. Here in Dallas,
spanking himself.
There it was.
Heard
there it was. Glory hole.
Perloff talking this morning. Maggie thinks that the Cowboys now need to tank.
Oh, yeah.
And pick a quarterback after they just signed Dak Prescott to hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, he's hurt, obviously, but that is an organization in disarray.
Disarray. Nate says Jerry's death house. Yes, come on into Jerry's death house. I mean, it is just...
You make it out alive, we actually you.
It is unbelievable what is happening right now.
Finally, a little doo-doo this for a Tuesday.
D-D mega doo-doo.
And I'm going to say about time for the Los Angeles Lakers to do the right thing. They have commissioned... A statue of former player and head coach Pat Riley, the team announced yesterday, and will add it to their plaza outside of Crypto.com Arena. Don't know exactly what took so long, other than the fact that Riley has been working as the president and before that coach of the Miami Heat for now decades. And I know maybe it's a little hard to honor someone who's been a rival for a while, but Pat Riley, such a critical member of the Showtime Lakers as the head coach, and now that Winning Time came out recently and just continuing to highlight his impact, he's going to go alongside other legends that have their statues outside of Crypto.com Arena, and it's about time, I'd say, for Pat Riley to finally get his due from the Los Angeles Lakers.
Are you more nervous in the year of our Lord 2024 when somebody tells you we're going to make a statue?
That's a good point.
I think that's actually more of a punishment these days based on what we've seen recently with Dwayne Wade's and Ronaldo's. It's more of those where you're like, you don't have to. How about a plaque? Let's just do a plaque.
I think they'll do a good job.
How about a handprint?
Pat Riley's slicked back hair, I think, lends itself to a statue, because it was very like rigid and stiff looking. So a statue is going to do it justice.
Same thing. I tend to agree, but you still got to get the face right.
You do have to get the face right.
It's more of a punishment than an honor, I'd say, these days, if somebody says they're going to build a statue of you. Thank you, Benny.
Be nervous. And that's Don't and Do This for a Tuesday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Well, as far as I know, nothing fell from the roof at Viejas Arena last night. Fans seemed to have a pretty good time. The only thing they didn't get was a victory over third-ranked Gonzaga. We'll talk a little college basketball last night's game when we come back with Ben and Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Viejas Arena was place to be last night. Had the typical 12,414 sellout crowd, but there was definitely a little extra juice in the building knowing who the opponent was.
And all you media folk out there last night, I saw Craig Elston
was there.
You were there. Just a bunch of just waving it around out there, big time in everybody.
Jake from Channel 8 and Julian
was
there.
Love Julian. Beloved. Darnay
Nick was James
there.
Was there. I didn't see Darnay.
Well, he probably has better seats than you. Let's be honest.
It's possible. Yeah. We were up in the rafters. Yeah, yeah, I was up in the nosebleeds. But it's a great arena to watch a basketball game. It's not a great arena to get in and out of the parking garage.
How long did it take you?
Getting in, over an hour from Channel 10, which is not far away. Getting out, well, we waited until after the post-game news conferences, so the crowd had already dispersed at that point. But it was the first time in 22 years that the Aztecs were double-digit underdogs at home. Arizona, 2002.
Wow.
And there was a reason for it. Gonzaga is a really good team, and we'll talk about last night's matchup coming up after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So a couple reasons, obviously, for the big point spread. Gonzaga, the third-ranked team in the country, a highly experienced team with seniors, guys like Ryan Nemhard and Graham Ike coming back, and the San Diego State team, very inexperienced, lots of new guys, fully new lineup, and not healthy either. Reese Waters was out, and while Miles Byrd did play, they didn't really have Miles Byrd, as he didn't score and ended up cramping up and not really playing in the second half either.
Was it a cramp?
That's what Dutch said afterwards. He cramped sitting on the stool.
I mean,
and was not able to get back into the game in the second half.
He was essentially like a Shohei Ohtani decoy out there in the first half. I mean, he was standing there, he's in off on the side, and wasn't able to be Miles Byrd, not even a little bit. And you got to think that the ankle was bothering him, but he was out there and was still able to play a little bit of defense. But he was a non-factor.
So, and the players, to their credit, Nick Boyd, who had a big game with 23 points, afterwards says, "We're not about moral victories here at San Diego State."
Yeah, I like that.
We were out to win this game. I don't feel good about this loss.
That's what Ben's for.
That's what I'm here for.
He texted us that last night.
Because despite all those built-in advantages for Gonzaga, the experience early in the season before San Diego State's really even had a chance to all practice together as a team, despite all the injuries, it was actually a fairly evenly matched game. Gonzaga was definitely better. They were never really threatened. San Diego State never got it closer than eight in the second half.
Eight,
is what they got it to. But they, I mean, there was, it was never also like Gonzaga never were able to completely put them away either in an 80-67 win. And ultimately, when you look on the stat sheet, the difference in the game, it was a 13-point game. Gonzaga made 27 of 31 from the free throw line. Wow. San Diego State made 13 of 18. So 14 more free throws made in a 13-point win. Outside of the free throw line, this was a dead even game between the two teams. Rebounds, almost dead even, 39 to 33. Offensive rebounds, 12 to 10. Gonzaga had a small edge everywhere, but not a big edge on San Diego State. And to me, that's actually a pretty good sign for the Aztecs.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, the moral victory, it's funny because it actually does count in college basketball and college football. I mean, that's kind of where the moral victories do count a little bit. And I know for the players, they're like, oh, cool, we only, you know, we held them to 80. Good job us, right?
But no, I hate it. It's absolutely accurate.
It's absolutely accurate,
even
but it
college
sucks.
Basketball even especially.
Yes, but the way the game started, you actually thought it was going to go the other way because it was Gonzaga that was a little bit sloppy and fouling, and Ike had two quick fouls, and you're like, okay.
Their whole team had like two fouls.
Yeah, they were sloppy, and really, I thought the Aztecs played pretty well. Again, man, like, what I didn't see was a really nasty, stifling Gonzaga defense, Ben. I saw us missing a lot of shots that you know, typically would fall. They certainly fell against Occidental. You know, we talked about how everything went in against those guys, and they just didn't fall last night, man. And I was impressed. But yeah, you never really felt like you had a shot. You know what I'm saying? The crowd was kind of out of it. You know, they had a little run there in the second half, but other than that, it was a really, really good basketball team that handled business.
Yeah, you know, and Dutch said after the game, you know, Jared Coleman-Jones had a couple of open threes. He knocks those down like the Braden Huff did for, those are the first two threes he had made all season for Gonzaga. He says that was a huge difference in the game. If we hit our open ones and they don't, from those guys who don't usually make them, that's different. Magoon Gwath is a very intriguing player, but he is very raw.
He's
raw,
man.
Five block shots, but obviously he's not scoring yet. 0 points, only a couple of rebounds. They're going to need more from him going forward. And as a freshman, you'd expect, you know, he's only going to get better. You're going to see more things from him going forward, but he's not there yet. And this was just a little bit too much to bite off this early in the season for San Diego
game.
State.
Yeah, 100%.
I thought the difference in the game, though, I thought fairly clearly, was Ryan Nembhard, who was
a stud, as
good of a college basketball point guard as I think you're going to find.
Yeah.
I don't know what his NBA prospects are in terms of how it translates to the next level, but in controlling the game, and B.J. Davis talked about it afterwards, like trying to guard him is like, you could just see. He knew exactly what he was doing. This guy,
bro, he
is so skilled and so in control of the basketball game.
And has the ability, he would dribble in and then lay just a little bit of a shoulder, right? And the guy, our defender would fly back six feet, and he's like, eh. And he would just stop and pop it, and it's over. He is tough, dude.
Yeah.
And then who's the guy I texted you guys about? Battle?
Oh, yeah.
Khalif Battle.
Good God. That guy's a man. I was like, that is a man. He reminds me of Jaden Ledee. Remember how Jaden Ledee would step on the court, and you go, that's a man amongst boys. Battle was looked like that. They're a ridiculously solid team.
Tons of, you know, experience, fifth-year seniors. They're like San Diego State was the last couple of seasons with, you know, players that had been in the program for a long time that had played a lot of college basketball.
They're good, man. They're
San
really
Diego
good.
State isn't that. And, you know, Nembhard finished with 19 points and 10 assists. I don't think that fully tells the story because that free-throwing edge, a lot of that was created by him.
Yes.
You know, he'd throw such a good pass to a guy that you either had to foul him or he was going to get a layup. It wasn't bad officiating. Even Dutch said, these are good officials. I don't really have a ton of complaints. I don't think they realized because they called so many fouls early on Gonzaga, then they started like, hey, we're evening it out. And he goes, you're evening it out, but we've only gone to the free throw line five times. They went to the line 16 times in the first half. You're calling that even. And while the fouls were even, it just, they got to the line so much more often, but it was probably because Nembhard was finding the guys in the right spots, either for baskets or if he didn't get the assist, he was getting his teammates to the foul line consistently with the way he played. Just skilled, savvy basketball last night by a team that you can see why they are the number three ranked team in the country.
So well coached. I mean, what was that stat last? He's been in the tournament every single year since he started coaching at Gonzaga.
He's got close to 1,000 games.
Yeah, dude.
And he's got an 830 something winning percentage as head coach.
Mark Few is unbelievable. Yeah, he's obviously one of the biggest names in college basketball now, and it's created an unbelievable program.
I would go. They would have they'd call it the Battle in Seattle. Growing up in high school, Gonzaga would come and play in downtown Seattle. One big game every December. We would always go because even back then, they were the premier team of the West Coast, like tournament favorites, you know, top five, top 10 teams every single year. And they've never really skipped a beat since 2006.
Have they won one?
They got to the finals, but they lost one in the finals, yeah.
So we settled in as a family last night to watch the Aztecs, and Bo's laying on the side of my arm right here, and Mark Few pops on the screen.
One of the funniest things you've ever
texted. I texted you guys this last night. I swear to God. Nobody's saying anything. We're just waiting for the game to start. So they pan to Mark Few, and they're talking about his accomplishments. Bo looks at me and goes, he looks like an a-hole, but he says the word. And I just start dying laughing. And I go, you know what? You're right. He actually does. He has the look of a coach where you're like, oh, God. But he's not. He's not.
Most college basketball coaches kind of do all look like
Dutch
that. Dutch is the only one who doesn't.
He's Dutch looks like your dad, you know?
But most of
Steve
them do
Fisher
have that.
Looks like your Steve grandfather. Fisher looks like your
grandfather. Other than Fish and Dutch, they all have that kind of that scowl and that look like, yeah, this is not a great guy.
Gonzaga's made it to the championship twice. 2017, right, 2021.
Lost both times.
I was crying when he said it. I go, it's a very astute observation.
I'm pretty sure he's a pretty nice guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, but he doesn't look that way.
He's got that look of like, oh, that guy's an a-hole. And when he said it, that guy just straight out of the blue, that guy looks like an a-hole. And I just said, oh, my God, man. It killed me.
So a couple of stats from this one last night. Speaking of Dutch, he falls to 2-1 against Gonzaga. Had beaten them both times they had played. This was the one that blew my mind. 6-1 now against top 25 opponents. First time they've lost on their home court to a top 25 opponent in the Brian Dutcher era. You're not supposed to beat top 25 teams most of the time, and they had never lost on that court. This is also the start, and there was some talk of it afterwards, and players weren't really going down that road. But with Gonzaga coming to the new Pac-12 in basketball and joining San Diego State in a couple of years, you get the sense that this is going to be an annual,
here we go,
really great rivalry on the West Coast. You know, meeting twice a year, once in Spokane, once in San Diego. Two programs that have become essentially the best two programs on the West Coast in college basketball. But there is a big difference. And while I'd love to say that San Diego State is on the same level, they're still a little bit behind Gonzaga. And one of the biggest reasons, and this was, I was walking outside the back of EAS Arena at the end of the night, going to the parking garage. And as I'm walking out, this woman is standing outside the Gonzaga team bus, the charter bus. And she goes, oh, I know you. Well, I know your voice more, but I'm the tier one. I listen to the show. And she says, I'm the bus driver for Gonzaga. And I said, oh, are you taking them back to the hotel, or are they flying back tonight in the airport? She goes, oh, no, they have their own private plane that they fly on anytime they go on the road. Gonzaga is such a well-funded basketball program. San Diego State, when they fly, most of the time commercial. You know, they have to go to the airport, go through security, wait, you know, 2 hours at the gate, and then fly. They get like four charter flights a year that they use very, like, strategically. If they have to go to like Wyoming or whatever, you know, they'll use them strategically. Gonzaga, they go anywhere. They get on the Gonzaga plane
and
fly to that game. Are you not telling me that's a
good recruiting tool?
It's a recruiting tool. It's an advantage in terms of just, you know, rest and
comfort,
health and comfort for your players, that they get to have their own private jet that they fly off, you know, back to Spokane.
Naive to say, well, yeah, they don't have a football program. They're a basketball school. Of course, all their money would be allocated towards the basketball program.
Yeah, Michael just said SDSU needs to take all the money they waste on football, pour it into their basketball program. I think you guys mentioned, you might have talked about it yesterday, like, I'll stroke a check right now to Aztec's NIL as long as I know it's going to Pharaoh Compton to keep him here after this season. Like, I need Pharaoh here for the next four, right? Like, I need him here. I need Miles Byrd here. These are the guys I want to watch for the next few years. Magoon Gwath, I need you here.
We did talk about it a little bit yesterday.
I'll stroke a check today.
I'm looking right now.
How do you do it?
That the success of the basketball program is actually probably an impediment for San Diego State football a little bit, because it's just where you want to devote more resources. Because they've had the success, you want to support, you know, Steve Fisher and Brian Dutcher and what they've done. And, you know, if Sean Lewis gets them to, you know, a 10-1 season, gets them to a playoff, then all of a sudden that could start changing and, you know, people are filling Snapdragon Stadium. Then you feel like, well, then maybe we want to do that. But until that day, why would you take a dollar away from the basketball program for the football program at this point?
It's like buying a stock, right? If I'm going to buy a stock, I'm going to, I get it. It's kind of like buying high, right? You're buying high with the Aztecs, but you also feel like you're going to get a genuine return on there. And you feel like, hey, I want to spend money on a product that I can believe in. And I don't think there's anything
wrong
with
Google
that.
Stock in 2024, it's expensive, but it's still Google
stock. Apple,
whatever.
I just feel like if I'm going to spend my money, I do feel that that's a better investment for success. As we sit here today,
unfortunately, it's super chicken and the egg, though, because how does the football team get any better without the money? But you're not going to give them the money until they get better.
Yeah.
Catch 22, Paulie, of college athletics. You just nailed it right there.
That's it.
You know, you can't get better without investing the money, but until you get better,
invest that?
Who do you want? Why do you feel like you're wasting the money until you do get better? It is definitely a dilemma. That is a problem in college sports.
Yeah, right, no question. No question about it. But, I mean, yeah, all in all, what was their average going into last night? They were scoring 100 points a game.
They were over 100 points per game.
The defense, I thought, played really, really well. Again, just a little sloppy at times.
Yeah.
You did not feel like they were just completely outmatched.
Young, inexperienced Aztecs team who has not played together very long. But I watched that game last night and I go, they could be a problem February, March, maybe even April.
Yeah,
like, absolutely.
When it matters, yeah. 100%.
You know, Dutch said, hey, you know what? We want to be better next week. They have 1 week from tonight, or today, this afternoon, actually, is their next game. Creighton, 14th-ranked Creighton in the Players Era Festival in Las Vegas. Is that the game you're going to, Paul?
That's the one, yeah.
So Paulie's going to be in Vegas at that game at the MGM Grand Garden. And Dutch says, I thought this was kind of interesting last night. He said, we do kids basketball camps during the off season. It's one way that San Diego State supports the program. And he goes, I see how much these kids can improve in a week. And I tell my kids, hey, I know we're at a higher level, but there's no reason that we can't get better in a week. Figure out a couple of things we're going to work on, and we will be better next Tuesday than we were last night. And if they take that mentality and go forward, yeah, I think they have a chance to be pretty good at the end of the year. Even I have a skeptical SDSU fan always texts me. I work with him, Steve, at the television station, and he said, as bad as it looked, I still think they have Sweet 16 potential maybe this year. So, got to get there, though.
Yeah, I mean, again, I didn't see anything other than a pretty good game against a really, really, really good
team.
And
they'll get Reese Waters back. Miles Byrd will hopefully get healthy soon, and they will be better going forward. All right, we will come back. We've got 2 hours still to go. Woodsy missed some stuff for the last couple of days, including the fight. I'm curious to get his take on
that. Yes.
Next here on 97.3 The Fan.